FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is 6-12-20. Used to be a bug spray, I think, called 6-12. So it always reminds me of that when it's this day. But are you a victim? Are you proud to be a victim? And what are the benefits of being a victim in modern America? Well, somebody who's not a victim, but has every reason or rationale to consider herself a victim under today's current social mores, a woman by the name of Kathy Barnett. Kathy, you're currently running for Congress in Pennsylvania, and you're also author of Nothing to Lose, Everything to Gain, Being Black and Conservative in America. There aren't enough of you around, I guess, but we are thrilled to have you on. And so the book, we're talking about the book, but we can't talk about the book without talking about your candidacy. And what is it that you're trying to achieve here besides getting elected?
Yeah. You know, I wrote the book, and if you read the book, I never intended to run for Congress. That was not on my bucket list of things to do ever. And there is nowhere in the book where I made that, where I remotely hinted to that being one of my life goals. I am here solely because I love my country and because I see the trajectory on which we're headed, and I vehemently oppose. And instead of sitting, waiting, and looking for someone else to swoop in and save us, swoop in and rescue us, swoop in and begin to speak with greater influence, I decided to raise my hand and to throw my hat in this race. And, you know, and from the very beginning, this campaign was not given a snowball chance in Hades of coming even remotely close to the uber progressive incumbent. But last Tuesday at the polls, our race not only matched the incumbent in votes, but we show that we are a contender and that we're able to carry the Republican ticket for the House. And this is in the 4th Congressional District of Pennsylvania. And so my point of running is because I love this country and I want to preserve this country. I often tell people I am a little black girl who grew up on a pig farm in southern Alabama. I grew up below the bottom rung of the economic ladder. I grew up in a home with no insulation, no running water, an outhouse in the back and a well on the side. And yet in this country, because I earnestly don't remember anyone telling me that I'm a victim as I was growing up. I don't remember anyone telling me that the odds are too great against me, so don't even try. So as a result of not being told that, I went on to become the first in my family to go and finish college. I spent 10 years in the Army Reserves, worked in the financial industry, corporate America, an adjunct professor of corporate finance. I speak to millions, multiple millions on a weekly basis in mainstream media, authored my first book that you just mentioned, and now I'm running for Congress. And I earnestly believe that my story only takes place here in America. I was mentioning to you before we came on, I believe I represent all that is good about this country. And no, this country is not perfect. And yes, this country has some ways still to go. But you cannot look at that without also recognizing how far we've come as a nation, and to be balanced about that and to be reasonable about that as we continue to move forward towards not just equality, but inclusion of various groups of people in this nation.
And that's an amazing story. And it's really not that unusual. So I want to talk about some things that we see in our country. A few of my heroes, Walter Williams, economist, and Thomas Sowell. I've had the pleasure and the honor of interviewing both of them for my show. And really, your philosophy is similar to theirs. I mean, Walter Williams says, hey, if you want to succeed in life, number one, don't drop out of high school. Number two, get a job. Number three, get married. Number four, buy a house. And all of these things will ensure your financial future and make you a success in America. When we look back to the 60s, black families, 85% had fathers, 15% didn't. Now it's almost the opposite. I don't know the exact numbers. And yet I never hear any of these self-appointed black leaders, and you know who I'm talking about, ever tell somebody, you know, it's not really a great idea to have a child out of wedlock at 15 or 16 years old. Rather, they encourage it because it's a new supply of victims, right?
I don't know if it's a new supply of victims, but it is definitely something that is not being spoken about in our culture today. You know, and in fact, if you bring it up, then people try to shout you down. Well, let's not focus on that. But overwhelmingly, right, I grew up in a single parent household, and I know exactly what it feels like to stand in front of an empty refrigerator door, wondering where the next meal is going to come from. I know exactly what it feels like to sit in a dark room because my single parent mother wasn't able to pay the light bills that week. And so, you know, and it was a struggle. I remember it being a significant hardship on my mother to raise, you know, myself and my two younger brothers. So there's nothing to be glorified about, you know, about being a single parent. And yet we recognize that there are a number of single parents in our country across colors, across races, but predominantly in the black race. And you're right, roughly 75% of little black boys and girls are growing up without a father. And then you begin to understand, you know, what does a father bring to the table? It is more than just my last name. But, you know, he tells me who, not only who I am, but my value and my worth. And he begins to teach me, you know, how to get a check if you're a little black boy, and how to bring that one check to that one family, and how to sustain that one family, or to a little black girl, looking at her and telling her you're valuable and this is how you are to be treated. This is your worth in life. Those things cannot be minimized. Those things mean so much as we, you know, as we recognize that a lot of what we do as adults, it was more caught than taught. You know, we just kind of watched around us and looked around us to see what was the prevailing thought.
Hey, and so important to have those role models and to have the guidance that you get here that you really can't get elsewhere.
You really can't, right? I mean, like, there's a reason why the family is the building block of every society. And it is in the government's best interest to make sure we have thriving, healthy families, right? And then when you look at the black community, you see that, you know, that there is, that at one point, definitely it was incentivized not to have a thriving, healthy family, because if you had a man in the home, then you received less money. And that's not just something I read in a history book, but it's something that I experienced just growing up with the women around me and the various families around me.
So you're not a Democrat, and to many in the black community, that makes you a traitor, doesn't it?
Well, I'm not a Democrat now, but as I talk about in my book, I mean, I was born into the Democrat Party just like I was born into brown skin. I don't remember ever having a conversation with anyone about why do we vote Democrat or why am I voting Democrat. It was just something you're handed down. It's like your inheritance. This is what you do. You're black. You vote Democrat. No one ever had a conversation. And I remember, you know, now being able to vote and very very excited about it. And I was, you know, studying the candidates, but never fully understood the bias that I had walking into the voting booth, because I, too, started out voting Democrat. And it wasn't until my junior year in college did it begin to dawn on me, why exactly am I voting Democrat? Did this person's ideology match my ideology? Do they see the world the way I see the world? And it really wasn't until I was a junior in college did that thought first bubble up. And it was, you know, maybe a couple of election cycles later did I begin to not vote exclusively Democrat. But today I am, you know, I am roundly a Republican. And yes, you know, some people see that as a unicorn. Black, not a Democrat. Oh my goodness, you must be a sellout. You must be a whole host of things, because every race of people are allowed to have their own thoughts, except for the Black community. We just heard Joe Biden a couple of weeks ago, right before George Floyd and the protest and rioting that ensued, that if you don't vote for me, then you ain't Black. Now, Joe Biden, you know, he just said out loud what we all know to be true, you know, to some extent. He wasn't supposed to say it out loud, but because of his demented state of mind, he actually said it out loud. But he said what many people believe. If you're Black, you cannot have your own thoughts. You must do as you're told. I know you think you're free, but not really. We still own you. So you gotta, if you're Black, you must vote Democrat.
Hey, and I could relate to this as being a Jew. My family was strictly Democrat, would never vote for a Republican. They viewed them as anti-Semites and country club guys who were just basically out to keep Jews down. And yet that isn't the modern Republican Party at all. It's kind of the big tent now. What are your thoughts about our president?
Well, I appreciate what the policies that he did pre-COVID-19. I appreciate the policies and the work and the effort in reaching out into the private industry to guide us through COVID-19. And I believe he is up against a rock in a hard place as we begin to try to open up our nations. He has a number of, more liberal-leaning governors who are refusing to open their state back up, which of course, you know, keeps people in an economic malaise. And then also now with the call to defund the police. I think it's very challenging. I believe like no other time in history, we need to take account of those who are leading us. And I believe Democrats are doing a really good job in making a distinction for the American people of what kind of government you're going to have if you give them the majority versus what kind of government you're going to have if you think outside of that, you know, very destructive box. I believe everything that they've offered us, the Democrat Party, has been, you know, very destructive. So as I go to the Black community, for example, you know, there's a very firm and deeply held distrust and dislike for this president, to put it mildly. And like I've said to every last one of them, you don't like this president? Okay, fine. I don't care. I've never tried to convince someone to like this president. I've only tried to convince people to understand when someone is working in your favor and then to have the good sense to get out of the way so they can continue to work in your favor. And as you look at what this president did specifically for the Black community, he addressed every single issue the Black community has ever brought before either side of the political aisle. He addressed it, whether it was, you know, opportunity zones going into those particular areas that fall 30% below the poverty line and bringing hundreds of millions of dollars into those areas. No one has ever dared to do such a thing. And now that we've had COVID-19 with, you know, those particular areas in particularly being rioted and looted, it's going to be somewhat of an uphill battle to convince a business to bring their business to that community. But before COVID-19, that's exactly what he was doing. So whether you like him or not is not of importance to me. It's whether or not someone is working in your favor. And that is an undeniable fact that he was, or that he is.
And you know, another interesting thing about the president is that before him, no Republican candidate otherwise ever reached out the way that he has to the black community to improve them. And now we're seeing the results in the polls, and that's got to be freaking out the Democratic Party when they see that 40% of blacks are approving of Trump.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Financial Survival Network is brought to you today by Orin Resources, a junior exploration company with the appetite of a major. It's hot on the trail of the next globally significant discovery, creating enormous potential upside for you, the shareholder. Orin is one of the most aggressive exploration companies pursuing high-grade, scalable gold and copper deposits, and has a premier 7-project portfolio, including its 2 flagships, Committee Bay in the Arctic and Sombrero in Peru. Orin's unparalleled technical team and highly experienced management has a history of success in advancing and monetizing exploration assets. No wonder Orin's been called one of the best in the junior exploration sector. Orin trades on the TSX and the NYSE under AUG. To learn more, go to orinresources.com. That's AURYNresources.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Listen, Democrats are banking on the fact that blacks are stupid. They are banking on the fact that, you know, in times past, we have not voted in our own best interest. And they are banking, they're betting the farm that we are those exact same people. And what they missed in 2016, when the hand-picked, anointed Hillary Clinton lost, they're missing it once again, that people are awake and people are angry and people want more than just lip service. They actually want something. So now Democrats believe that they're swinging on an issue that, you know, that will resonate in the black community. When you start talking about defunding the police department, I mean, that will impact minority communities more than any other community. I remember walking down a very wealthy street in New York City, hopping in one high-end store after another, buying nothing, but enjoying the experience nonetheless. And it dawned on me by the time I got to maybe the 5th store, my daughter and I hopped in, it was a Tiffany. And as soon as we walked into Tiffany's, it was 3 very large security guards. It was almost as if I had walked into a wall, so much so that I paused and was like, is everything okay? And they were very kind, but it dawned on me that every very high-end store I went into, they had armed security to the teeth. They were not playing. It was almost like full riot gear without the head mask. They had dogs and everything. They were not playing. And I was thinking to myself, that is something that I, who don't live in a gated community, would not be able to afford, or the stores that I primarily visit do not have. And specifically in these black communities, they need policing. So instead of defunding the police, let's talk about giving more funding for better training.
Yeah.
Creating systems like that. But you start talking about defunding and reimagining, right? They love those words. Reimagining what the police department will look like, although they're giving us no specifics. Let's just reimagine, right? That is going to have very real negative impact on the Black community. So Black people are not stupid to that. We recognize that we have a larger number of police presence because there's tend to be a larger amount of crime in those minority inner city type communities. And so we're not stupid. We recognize that, and we recognize what liberals are actually proposing.
Yeah, it sounds like an act of complete insanity. Look, the way that you, if you turn on TV, the mainstream media and the community, it seems like it's happy hunting on Blacks, kind of like runaway slaves in the South. Is that really what's going on here?
Well, we did see it in Georgia with Ahmaud Arbery, the father-son, the two white father-son duo chasing down in a truck, jumped out and shot him down in the street like a dog. And I don't care what Ahmaud was doing prior to that. I don't care if he was jogging. I don't care if he was trying to steal the house, stuff it in his pocket, and run off with it. He did not deserve to be shot down in the street, right? So no. Now, so we can look at that and we can say that is wrong. We can look at George, what happened to George Floyd. I don't care if George Floyd was trying to snatch the store, stick it in his pocket too, and run off with it. He did not deserve to be murdered, right? That was excessive, right? And everyone in this, I did not see anyone say, wait, I need more information. I need more facts first. I saw the heart of a nation rise up and condemn what we were all looking at. It was horror being played out in front of us. I couldn't even watch it. I had to just start reading the transcript. It was just too disturbing for me. And yet we can say that as Americans, and we said that, right? And we can call that out. But does that now, do we make the leap from that to say all of America is rotten? No, it would be the exact same scenario if I said there are peaceful protests. My family and I participated in one of the peaceful protests here in the 4th District of Pennsylvania. And it was peaceful and it was wonderful. And I was glad that we participated in it. But we have seen over the course of 2 weeks that there are agitators in some of these peaceful protests. Now, are we to say because there are a few bad apples in those peaceful protests that all of the protesters are now bad and that we should shut down all of people's rights to or infringe upon people's rights to protest? No, that would be illogical. And the same way with excessive abuse or acts of racism, or acts, you know, I mean, you know, call it what you want. That looks like racism to me that played out on the streets of Georgia. But number, whatever you call it, we can call that out without now saying, see, all of America is racist. It just doesn't make any sense. And no one is willing to have that level of an honest conversation and hold people to the analytical rubrics of thinking clearly, right? Let me hold your thinking to the fire and let's examine what it is that you want us to believe. No one is willing to have that. Everyone is very emotional. And when emotions have a pipeline to making laws, which it does right now, we're in trouble. We're in trouble in this nation.
Yeah. And these cases that you mentioned are the exceptions, right? They're not the rule.
They're not the rule. Slavery was the rule. Jim Crow law was the rule. And our government coddled it, and perpetuated it, right? That's systemic racism. Redlining, that's a rule. Blockbusting, that was a rule. It was very racist. Having litmus tests for a Black man to be able to vote, right? Tell me how many jelly beans are in this jar. That's a rule, and that's systemic racism, right? And that should not be tolerated, and our nation rose up against it in 1964 with the Civil Rights Movement. Now, did we become whole in 1965? No, it's a journey, right? It's like slavery was abolished in 1863, but did we have equality? No, that took place in 1964. But did we all become miraculously equal? No. And now, 56 years later from the civil rights movement, we're at the precipice of something else that could pivot to see some positive. And that is the financial and educational inclusion of minorities and other underserved populations. So can we have that conversation and recognize that we're not perfect, that there's still some ways to go for us, but can we also be balanced and recognize where we have come from?
Yeah. And let's, you have to be reasonable about these things and really work against the underlying problem. So what about the fact of, you know, welfare, the welfare state, these schools that you talked about? To me, the educational system, what we see in the inner cities, is about the worst possible situation ever. Kids are not learning. They're warehoused, literally. Keep them off the streets. And what do we do about education here? Because to me, that is like the largest issue. And when they do try to fix it in places like New York with charter schools, which are maybe not the complete solution, but certainly they've been an improvement overall, then the Democratic Party, in the face of Bill de Blasio, they try to destroy them and shut them down. How do we really get the black youth to be educated where the schools, public schools across the country, are failing? And it's not just for black youths. They're failing
right,
us
exactly,
all.
Right.
They're failing all of us.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I earnestly believe that financial inclusion is the civil rights movement of today. And I can add to that education, right? I mean, like education being a building block of that, right? Because I love Frederick Douglass's quote where he said, knowledge makes a man unfit to be a slave. And so once I have knowledge, and not a degree necessarily, degrees are good, and I have a couple of those, but not degrees necessarily, but knowledge. Knowledge makes a man. So not just having information, but knowing how to apply that information properly. That's knowledge. That makes a man unfit to be a slave. And there are a plethora of ways that we walk through life acquiring knowledge. And so knowledge being the underbelly of financial inclusion, because financial inclusion is very important as far as getting people to be able to take part of the prosperity of this nation. And so I think it's very interesting when you look at places like, you know, Minneapolis, for example, and as it relates to education, as well as financial inclusion. I mean, everything kicked off there in Minneapolis, right? Now, Democrats will have us to believe that George Floyd died on the streets of one of the most lily white communities possible, that he died on the streets, you know, in a Republican stronghold area. But in fact, Minneapolis, Minnesota, they have been landlocked by Democrats since the 70s. You have, from the very top, the governor is Democrat. The Attorney General Keith Ellison is Democrat. Amy Klobuchar in the Senate is Democrat. Ilhan Omar in the House is Democrat. The mayor of Minneapolis is Democrat. The chief of police in Minneapolis, Democrat. It's a Democrat stronghold with Democrat policies. They get to make up whatever they want, and no one, I mean, even the Board of Commissions, commissioners are overwhelmingly Democrat. I think it's like 15 and 13 of them are Democrats. So they could just dream up any policies, any utopian imaginary ideas that they want. And yet, that particular officer who had his knee on George Floyd's neck, Officer Chauvin, Amy Klobuchar had an opportunity
right.
to prosecute him and did not, because they never intended to. They don't care. However, they're coming before the American people and telling and trying to present this image that they are for the people and that they are for the little ones and that this would never have happened had they been in charge. And yet, when you look at the facts, they've had more than four decades to get it right. And so as we look forward, we have to ask the question, what are you going to do now that you did not do the past four decades, the past 40 years? when you have complete control. And that is going to be the responsibility of the individual people, because as of today, we're still free as individuals. That is fast move. I mean, like that is leaving us quickly, especially if we move to more and more mail-in ballots. We're going to find ourselves not having these freedoms to make these choices. And it's up to us to decide what kind of country do we want to live in. Education is very important. Financial inclusion is very important, but perhaps more important than all of that is an American people who understand the liberties that we have and that we're ready to fight for those. That is what we need, an awakening, removing the scales from our eyes so that we can see clearly what is being offered, because I believe the distinction has never been clearer on what the left is offering versus what the right is offering. And we're going to have to learn to get out of our emotions and begin to think clearly about this.
I couldn't have summed it up better myself. And let's see, where do we find you on the web? What's your site there?
Kathy Barnett for Congress.com. Kathy Barnett for Congress.com. That's Kathy with the K. Barnett for Congress.com.
All right. Well, we really love what you're doing. We'll have a link in the show notes to your site there and your book. I assume we get it at Amazon or wherever fine books
are sold.
Wherever fine books used to be sold.
I know.
It's a crazy world, but thanks for giving us some clarity here, and thank you for doing what you're doing. I know I ran for town council once upon a time, and it was a truly horrible experience, because basically half the people are going to wind up hating your guts no matter what you say. And the other half aren't going to be there for you when you think they're going to be. So my hat's off to you. Thank you for trying to make a difference. And thank you for making a difference. Any questions or comments for Kathy, we'll forward your emails to her. It's kl@kerrylutz.com. Our website, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Sign up for the free newsletter. Kathy, we can only pray that you win. You truly are a breath of fresh air. And we need you. We need your voice on Capitol Hill.
I agree. Thank you for having me.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.